All right, we're back. We're not going to waste any time in this final segment. A tight 25-minute whiteboard coming up. Let's open it up.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Headlines. The Canucks beat the Anaheim Ducks 5-1 in Southern California on Tuesday night. And they're on the ice as we speak down at the Crypto.com Arena in LA Live. Joining us with a practice report, a very special guest today, Dan Murphy. Dan, what's the latest from Canucks practice?
Well, the latest is I'm here. And I definitely would not have been if it was out in El Segundo. So we're lucky it was at the big rink today. we made an appearance down here. What's the latest there? I don't think it's going to be a very long practice. They were just going through some 2-on-2 drills that turned into 3-on-3 drills.
Just getting the sweat.
Line rushes. Yeah, there haven't been any line rushes yet or anything of that sort. All three goaltenders, I'm just going to check here. Demko may have left the ice now, but he was just out there just a short time ago. So he was out before the skate, and he stayed on for a good 25 minutes just working with Marco and going through some movements. And so he is no longer out there, and no sign of forward. But I did see him last night in Anaheim, so he's still with the team, and I haven't seen Joshua. So I know that talk had said yesterday was a scheduled day off for Joshua because he'd been going pretty hard. So I don't know what this means that he's not out here today. Maybe he's still not feeling great after working hard for a week there, but I'm sure we'll get the update from the coach when all is said and done.
So, and so Demko on the ice with his teammates for practice, but limited to individual workout on the side,
exactly,
as opposed to being a full participant.
Exactly. So I know that he was out prior taking shots. I don't know if it was with a couple teammates or Jason Krogh, because I didn't see that part. I think the Canucks insider might have tweeted something there.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, he was out here for quite a while. I'm just working solo with Marco on some certain movements and stuff when I saw him.
Perfect. So that's all the latest from Canucks practice. Murph, thank you so much for giving it to us direct from the source. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I enjoy these 3-minute hits. I'm good at these. I didn't swear or anything.
Well, now that I know you're willing to do them, we might occasionally ask for them. Thank you so much.
You're breaking up here. Okay.
That's Dan Murphy, Sportsnet's very own, the host extraordinaire of Canucks regional broadcasts, bringing you all the news that's fit to print from Vancouver Canucks practice. All right, so let's get into the win in Anaheim, okay? It was clearly their most complete effort of the season. Clearly. I thought they played excellent. I thought their defensive game in particular was through the roof, was great. And I think it matters. We know that the Canucks ultimately are going to need to do more in terms of beating good teams, right? I mean, they get waxed by Carolina, even though they get a point. They get, you know, throttled by the New Jersey Devils pretty decisively. They go into San Jose and it's a tough one, right? Like a tough game. They do not play particularly well, especially defensively, but they grind out a win in dramatic fashion. Last night in Anaheim, it matters that you go out and even against an inferior team. And I thought the Ducks played pretty embarrassing hockey. I mean, I thought it was direct to watch. Certainly, they struggled massively to generate and barely looked interested in generating a lot of pucks just off the wall or off the glass and into the neutral zone. The Canucks would regroup and attack with speed and repeat, rinse and repeat. A bit of a shooting gallery for Lucas Dostal. And you realize sort of why Dostal's had so many 40-save performances pretty quickly as you watch that game unfold. That context aside, it matters that this team starts to grind out some decisive wins. We've seen them win twice by more than a goal. Once in Chicago, once in Anaheim. Opponents aren't great, but it still matters. It's still important that this team show that they have the gear to skate opponents off the ice. We saw it regularly last season. We saw it against good teams last season. This team hasn't quite clicked into that gear, but getting it done in Anaheim, to me anyway, I thought that was meaningful, an important data point. Now, you know, having had a pretty dispiriting homestand, especially with their performances against Carolina and New Jersey, the Canucks have had two get-right games on the road in Northern California and Southern California, leading into this game against a red-hot Los Angeles Kings team that is, look, the Kings, I think the Canucks are a better team. I was talking about that a lot going into the season, but the Kings have been picking their teeth with their most recent opponents, right? They dusted off the Minnesota Wild 5-1. The Wild have been playing some great hockey, 3-0 against the Predators on Monday. I mean, that's solid, right? Like they have basically won two games against playoff caliber teams, in my opinion, over the course of this week. They also recently beat, just before Halloween, they recently beat the Golden Knights. So this LA team has tapped into something, and it's a big test. We do want to see, I think, this team show that they can beat good teams, right? At this point in the season, Canucks have 6 wins. They have 5 of them in regulation, and those regulation wins have come against uniformly NHL draft lottery caliber opposition, cannon fodder teams that the Canucks have been able to defeat in 60 minutes. Getting a win against the Kings would represent meaningful progress, and at this point in the season, that's still all we're looking for, especially because the Canucks have accumulated the sorts of points clip. That's positioned them to take a real run at winning this division for a second consecutive year. Jake DeBrusk scores his second goal in as many games. Just as importantly, he now has 2 shots in each of his last 2 games in both contests, by the way, against the Sharks and against the Anaheim Ducks. All of his shots in the third period. So he's getting better as the games go along, and hopefully that's a microcosm of what we can expect from DeBrusk this season. Importantly to me, his shot rate at 5-on-5 is now ticked above 5 shots per hour. That's what we want to see. We just want to see DeBrusk generating the way that he did the last couple of games. I think he looks like he's beginning to round into form, and hopefully that progress carries over. The Heinen, Bluger, Sherwood line. Road again in Anaheim. Man, that line is fast, annoying, fun. At one point, Sherwood got into it with Trevor Zegras and annoyed Trevor Zegras so much that he took his glove off so as to flip the bird at Sherwood. That's what you love to see, right? You're agitating pest-type players, really getting under the skin of the skilled players on the opposition. Great game for Sherwood. And what a great finish on the game winner from Sherwood off of that lovely drop pass from Erik Brännström. Another fabulous game for Brännström. So I think that's, we can leave it there in terms of headlines. Those are the major observations. We'll add Demko returned to practice with the group, although appeared to be limited, and his work was isolated to individual work off to the side with Canucks goaltending coach Marco Terenius. However, a meaningful sign of progress that Demko has been a little bit more engaged with his teammates on the ice, both following morning skate and today at Canucks practice. Vancouver's Vezina nominee starter appears to be getting closer to returning to, you know, full participant status at Canucks practices, which is great. All right, broadsheet. Not a lot of Canucks innuendo out there, which means, as we like to say, the Canucks, they're working the phones, looking for a top 4 upgrade on defense. But you know what? Because of the cap environment, because of how few teams are selling, it's going to be tough. We'll reinvigorate that old bit, which is especially applicable, it seems, to sort of where the Canucks are poised at the moment. I do want to note this and spotlight this. Barry Trotz on Nashville radio was asked about shaking up his struggling team. Of course, the Predators spent luxuriously in free agency, bringing in Steven Stamkos, bringing in Jonathan Marchessault, bringing in Brady Shea, came into the season with relatively short Stanley Cup odds and high expectations, and they have gotten off to a 4-7-1 start in their first 12 games. That's 9 points, a minus 12 goal differential, which is the second worst among all Western Conference teams, with the exception of the San Jose Sharks. Yikes! Yikes, it's been a bad run out for the Nashville Predators. Asked if he might shake things up, Barry Trotz responded with the following. I'm trying to do some things right now. We will be limited a little bit because of contracts. If we don't get it going, then I'm going to start our rebuild plan. Woo! Woohoo! Starting a rebuild after signing a bunch of mid-30s scoring forwards is tough spot for the Nashville Predators. I want to bring this up just as something to pay attention to. Right now, it's hard to find a fit given Vancouver's needs live on defense, and who knows what the Predators will look to do if they're making future-oriented deals. But certainly the Predators have some intriguing defenders that fit the Tocchet template up and down their lineup. Jeremy Lauzon and Dante Fabbro in particular are both guys that can play the right side, although Lauzon is a lefty. But I think they're interesting names to monitor here, especially if Nashville ends up being something like a seller. Not just because I think they're interesting names and because I think they fit the template of how Vancouver wants to play defense, but also they're at sort of contractual levels that make them relatively straightforward for the Canucks to fit into their lineup. Just something that I'll be monitoring here. If the Nashville Predators sell, there are some defenders that would appear to sort of, I guess, more or less fit into what you think the Canucks would need. Although ideally, I think this Canucks team would or should anyway probably prefer, you know, more of a robust sort of puck moving option. Lauzon and Fabbro are interesting names to track. Lauzon, of course, being more of a credible top four option than Fabbro, who's really a third pair guy. The other name there, by the way, that I just want to bring up, and you know, it's this the second time that we've brought him up over the course of this program, so love doing that. Michael McCarron, okay, 29-year-old center slash right wing, but really he's a center. He's right-handed. We know how much that matters to Rick Tocchet. He is an expiring free agent. He'll be a UFA after this season. He is 6'6". He is 235 pounds. He has chemistry with Kiefer Sherwood. They played on a line together that pestered the heck out of the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, what are we talking about? If you're talking about who the Canucks could land on this Predators roster, like who on the Predators roster would the Canucks bring up in a pro scouting meeting and everyone would be like, oh man, that's almost exactly what we're looking for? Michael McCarron. That's a name as well to just file away, put in the back drawer. We'll check in a couple months when not trade deadline season, but like Jim Rutherford's classic shopping season, December and January, come about. All right, let's go to lineup notes. The Canucks practiced today. Derek Forbert absent, as we went over. Dakota Joshua absent, as we went over. Demko at practice briefly, doing limited work off to the side. The Canucks, however, took practice with the following lineup, according to The Athletic's Harmon Dial, who happens to be at LA Live for the practice at Crypto.com Arena. And you'll be shocked to hear it. No changes. Canucks pretty happy with how they played, dusting the Ducks on Tuesday night. So DeBrusque remains with Miller and Besser. Pew Suter's top six audition continues as he's playing with Pettersson and Garland. Heinen, Bluger, Sherwood, don't you dare touch that line. And Hoglander, Atu Ratu, and Daniel Sprong bringing up the fourth line. A fourth line that played pretty frequently in that game on Tuesday and certainly looked like they had the offensive pop that you'd imagine they'd have based on what it looks like on paper. Hughes Hronek, Susie Myers, of course, the top four has not shifted all season. Brännström and Desharnais continuing to get a look here. There is a report out there that I do want to spotlight from Irfan Gafar, who suggests that Derek Forbert's absence might be weeks as opposed to day-to-day. Rick Tocchet, of course, noted that Forbert would be evaluated yesterday, so I'd assume that Tocchet will have a more forthcoming, a more fleshed-out update following Canucks practice today in Los Angeles. Would be a tough loss. I mean, Forbert's had a lot going on personally over the course of this month. Of course, we know he's been dealing with a family tragedy, hasn't really had the opportunity to get his feet under him with his new club, and now appears to be hurt and reportedly, according to Irfan Gafar, may be hurt for a length of weeks, maybe even a month, as a result of, you know, a presumed lower body injury. So we'll see if Tocchet has more updates on Forbert and Joshua, who was also absent at practice today after the club declared that he was sort of taking a rest and or maintenance day because he'd been pushing it during morning skate on Tuesday. Let's go to the playoff odds in terms of the playoff odds here. Okay. The Vancouver Canucks remain projected to finish with the most points of any Pacific Division team. 106-point projection, according to Dom Lecision's model, 96% odds of making the playoffs, and their Stanley Cup odds sit at 9%, which at the moment is higher than Winnipeg's, Florida's, Dallas's, the New York Rangers, and behind only the Oilers, the Hurricanes, and for some reason the Maple Leafs. Dom's model has always loved the Maple Leafs, and so it continues. The Vancouver Canucks, by the way, everyone's talking about how they've played a soft schedule. I don't know that they've played that soft a schedule. Looking up sort of point percentage, head-to-heads, and all of that stuff, it does look like the Canucks have played roughly an average schedule in the opening 6 weeks of the season. I think what stands out more to me is the identity of the teams that they've been able to beat in regulation, and the fact that, you know, against Florida, it was an overtime game. Barkov and Tkachuk weren't in the lineup. Tampa Bay beat them. They got beat by Carolina. They got beat by New Jersey. Like, for me, it's more that it's not that the Canucks have feasted on a soft schedule. It's that the Canucks have not looked imposing, have not looked like themselves the way they did last season when they bumped into those teams that we have higher expectations of this season. So that again, sort of is one bit of context to apply here. I don't think it's fair to say that the Canucks have just played cupcakes over the course of the first 5 weeks of the season. They've been playing average opponents, and they've been beating the teams they should. I think that next step, what I think we're waiting to see, is the Canucks to find their game and to play one of those sort of like statement identity type games against a top tier opponent. Do the LA Kings match that description when the Canucks go in to face them at Crypto.com Arena tomorrow? Probably not, right? The Kings are, you know, an important division rival. They're a playoff caliber opponent, but I don't think the LA Kings are being widely viewed as a team with Stanley Cup aspirations. I don't think they should be. So that team's probably not one that necessarily gives the Canucks a bar they can even leap over in this context. But, you know, it would still be the best opponent that Vancouver's defeated in regulation this season if they're able to pull it off on Thursday night in Los Angeles. And of course, Connor McDavid will visit Vancouver for a playoff rematch on Saturday. It does look like McDavid is back into the Edmonton Oilers lineup tonight. The greatest player in the world, also tough as nails, returning well ahead of schedule for a pair of key divisional games as this Edmonton Oilers core group looks to sort of, you know, right the ship. Not that they've played badly. I mean, they've won a couple games in McDavid's absence. They're back up to 13 points in 13 games, but man, it would mean a lot, especially with how things broke down for them as the Stanley Cup final went along, if the Oilers were able to, you know, make a real run at having like an elite, full, sustained regular season. So that would be something to watch for here. McDavid is back. Betting odds. Okay, betting odds. The thing I wanted to talk about was the regular season awards market. Okay, and in particular, it is wild to me, especially if you watched that game last night, the extent to which Quinn Hughes has fallen behind in Norris balloting. Because of Cale Makar's wild level of offensive production, even though the Colorado Avalanche have been wildly permissive in his minutes defensively, he is a minus 160 favorite already to win the Norris. Minus 160. A healthy, like 55% plus odds of taking home the Norris. Look, if it's voted on the back of a hockey card, no doubt about it. Adam Fox, by the way, is second at plus 650. Quinn Hughes at plus 750. So repeating as the Norris Trophy winner is going, you know, has long odds for Quinn Hughes, 7.5 to 1 as the market looks at it today. There is no world in which the reality of Hughes's impact is reflected in that market. And yet, I don't even know that I'd recommend it as a good long shot, even though I think it's clear this season that he's playing at the level of the best defender in the sport, probably pretty likely to sustain that provided he remains healthy. The scoring part of it, the way that this award is voted on, the extent to which perception is going to dictate this, I mean, honestly, makes Hughes a probably appropriately priced. He is a massive long shot. It's just that that's wrong. Flat out wrong, if you're paying attention. So that's it. That'll close the whiteboard for today. And I'm going to ask producer Lena as we kill about five more minutes here, just help me out by bringing it out another good question or two from the inbox.
Well, since we were on the Cale Makar talk and Quinn Hughes, can you ask Drance what achievement will Huggy win next?
Four Nations? I mean, the Four Nations is what stands out to me. I think Team USA is going to be an absolute buzzsaw at the Four Nations tournament. I mean, I think they're going to be... Honestly, I think there's going to be an argument for Canada to be the third best team on paper going into that tournament, especially once you factor in goaltending. I mean, you know, if you're thinking about America's just absolute legion of star level players, you know, it's not difficult to project them with something like Gensel, Matthews, Kachuk, Boldy, Eichel, the other Kachuk. Are we going to get a Kachuk line? We might get a Kachuk line. You've got Tage Thompson, who's absolutely firing on all cylinders. Jack Hughes, Luke Hughes, Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Besser might be on the fringes of consideration. Kyle Connor, Dylan Larkin, Jason Ross. I mean, look, not that I couldn't do a similar exercise for Canada, but it's just in the past, you'd be talking about America's best players and you'd be like, and then you've got Kessel and... You're quickly at like James Van Riemsdyk and, you know, like you've got Joe Pavelski and you are quickly talking about like and Brooks Orpik on defense or whatever, right? Like you could list 5-6 players on Team USA that would scare you. But by the time you got 10-11 names down, the skill gap between, well, Canada's got Jamie Benn on the fourth line and Team USA didn't have an answer to that. Like you could have realistically... something like a JT Miller, Larkin, Kyle Connor fourth line for Team USA this year. We've never seen the American, USA hockey ice a forward group that deep. And that's without even getting into, you know, Fox and Hughes and McAvoy or Hellebuck and Swayman and Ottinger and Demko if he gets back to full health. I mean, this Team USA roster is preposterous. And so... I'd look at that like Four Nations faceoff. If Quinn Hughes goes in and is used as America's number one defenseman and is playing with his brothers and they win, I really think that could have a massive impact on Hughes's sort of star, like Hughes's stock around the league, I think could explode off of that. And look, I think that team is going to be an absolute, no doubt about it, real contender at the tournament. Like, I think they're going to be one of the best teams. In fact, I think on paper, they have the best and most complete roster. I'd even look at Sweden and their depth on defense and, you know, they'll be able to sort of have Markstrom or Allmark or Gustafsson in goal. I'd look at their goaltenders too for Sweden and think, okay, like I might take that lineup too ahead of Vancouver. Vancouver ahead of Canada. Not that Canada's not ludicrous themselves, right? I mean, you've got McDavid, you've got Crosby, you've got MacKinnon, you might have Bedard. We all know, though, that once you get to the goaltenders, right? Once you get to the defense, even. Look, Team USA is going to have two leading Norris candidates. Sweden's going to have Victor Hedman plus. Canada's going to have Makar and Taves and, you know, like some really good players, Noah Dobson, Bouchard. I mean, there's great players, but I don't know that Canada's dominantly deep on defense. It feels like Team USA is probably going to have the best blue line talent. They're going to have the best goaltending. And while I think Canada has more of the top forwards, like no one's in McDavid's weight class, period. And if anyone's close to it, it's probably MacKinnon. So... Even though you're going into the tournament saying, quite rightly, Canada's got the two best forwards likely to be in it, you know, I think America's forwards 3 through 12 are going to be just as, if not more skilled than what Canada's icing. So Four Nations face-off, Quinn Hughes, I think that's going to be a big moment for Vancouver's captain in terms of league-wide perception around his game. Anyway, doing that, I've talked myself into 7.5-1 for Quinn Hughes for Norris. That's it. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow, or at least I will be. We'll see if Jamie Dodd makes it back. You've been listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.